It's a bit of a walk from the library to Stop 8, Agitation Hill, and on the way I'll mention some of the landmarks you'll pass. Remember, if I get ahead of you, pause me and start again when you're ready. But before you leave the library, it's been here since the Gold Rush days, and in that time has had only 7 librarians, a testimony, as Robin explained earlier, to Castlemaine as a book-reading town. Now from the library, walk down Barker Street, and the second building on your left is the original Castlemaine Telegraph Station. Opened in 1857, it's the oldest surviving telegraph station in Australia. Today it's the headquarters of the Castlemaine Association of Pioneers and Old Residents, who have been going since 1880. To be a pioneer, you need to have come here before 1855. If you came after that, which is most of us, and have lived here for 15 years, well, you can join as an old resident. So there you go. A clear guideline to that old conundrum on who is and who's not yet a local. Next on the corner of Littleton Street is the post office built in 1875. There, you turn right, cross Barker Street, and walk up Littleton Street. About 30 metres up in the middle of the road, you'll see the bust of a rather handsome man, Sir Harry Lawson, who was Premier of Victoria from 1918 to 1924. What charms me about Harry Lawson was that each Monday morning he travelled to Melbourne by steam train and then, on Friday afternoon, returned to Castlemaine, where the Premier spent the weekend bird-watching and playing cricket. Harry Lawson's connections also provided great works of art for the Castlemaine Art Gallery and Museum, which is the Art Deco building further up Littleton Street on your left. Inside there's a wonderful collection of Australian art, and it's well worth a visit sometime, but now I'm going to lead you on towards Agitation Hill. So up Littleton Street, just past the gallery, there's a driveway to the left that runs below the Uniting Church. Walk down that drive to the far end, where you'll find a set of steps down to Moston Street. And by the way, en route, you get a good view back to the Burke and Wills Monument. Then from the bottom of the steps, it's straight across Moston Street and then the gate of the Christ Church. Follow the path up to the front of the church. There you will be on Agitation Hill, and as you walk, I'll give you the story. Although they were often called the police, it was the military who ruled the goldfields. They set up camp here in October 1851, a month after the gold rush began. And to cut straight to the heart of it, the military camp quickly became known as a place of, and I quote, cruelty, dissipation, partiality, injustice and other enormities, where one would know the officers of the law by the a la militaire costume and hauteur, gold-laced strutters, whose daily and nightly duties were burning tents and all property therein and destroying stores without inquiry or trial. That was from an auctioneer named Hitchcock describing what was in Castlemaine a brutal police state. Here's Robin Anea.
And not just brutal, the police and the whole issue behind the Agitation Hill outbreak, if you like, of uprising, is the corruption of the police. And that was more to the point, corrupt and brutal, deadly combination. There was a whole system of kickbacks and payoffs going on, and the informant would get some and Inspector Christian would get some, and whether there was any truth in the rumour, well, so what? So any fines that were levied, and they were hefty fines for sly grogging, they would score, as well as, you know, goods from the place that was pulled down and set fire to. So there was just a systematic system of corruption and rorts that went really deep.
Christian, whom Robin mentions, was a sub-inspector, and he was anything but Christian. As with all Goldfields policemen, Christian was on a 50% cut of the fines he generated. Selling sly grog, for example, was a £50 fine. That was a year's ordinary wages. So, as you can see, being a copper in Castlemaine came with its perks. And so it was when on the first Saturday in May, 1853, Sub-Inspector Christian was informed by a paid police informer named Mangan that a boarding house keeper, Mr. McMahon, was manufacturing and selling sly grog. It was a lie, but that night, Sub-Inspector Christian and his troopers destroyed Mr. McMahon's boarding house and ransacked his possessions. 40 boarders stood outside in the dark and saw their belongings disappear into the government camp. The following Monday morning, the boarding house keeper McMahon was brought to court, but he was acquitted for lack of evidence. Instead, Mangan, the police informer, got 5 years for perjury. God knows what may have happened if McMahon had been found guilty, but even with the acquittal, within hours there were signs all over Castlemaine proclaiming, "Men of Castlemaine, meet on the hill, diggers, avenge your wrongs and demand your rights, or otherwise you will live and die all slaves." By 4 o'clock, 1,000 diggers, traders, shopkeepers, clergy, and businessmen met on the hill which overlooked the government camp, and that's where you're heading, to Agitation Hill. So if you're not there yet, you should at least be near the Christ Church in Moston Street, so pause this and restart when you're outside the front of the church. Alright, you should now be outside the front door of the church on Agitation Hill. About 300 metres through the trees below and across the railway line is where the government camp used to be. It's a footy ground now called Camp Reserve, but in 1853 the diggers called it, loathingly, the Sacred Camp. And no doubt, from the Sacred Camp, Christian and his troopers could hear the diggers. On the hill, Mr. Jones, a Campbell's Creek auctioneer, summed up the situation. "The tyranny of the government," he said, "has been such that unless people take steps to intercept a despotic invasion of their constitutional rights, the relentless and unscrupulous authorities would take further liberties." And a Dr. Southby voiced the emotion. "If the government persist in this oppression, the public of Castlemaine are unanimously determined to oppose the authorities, crumble them to dust as useless worms, and chivalrously demand their individual liberties." So this place where you're standing became Agitation Hill, a place for dissent. However, a year after the big meeting, the government gave this spot to the church, and Agitation Hill was renamed Church Hill. The regimental banners of the Goldfields Military Corps were hung inside the church, and the military officers made the diggers sit on a wooden bench at the back. Which, of course, meant that the locals never forgot Agitation Hill, and today it's again known by that name. Here's Ken Parker, the rector of the parish, who talked to me here where you're standing, overlooking the old government camp. I began by asking Ken about a series of lectures he runs called the Agitation Hill Lectures.
Well, about 3 years ago, I think, the idea came to have some regular lectures here, two or three lectures a year, and to revive the use of the old name. Before the church was built on this hill, it was called Agitation Hill. But then when the church was built, the parson who was here at the time said, "Well, previously this church has been called Agitation Hill, but now the church is here, we'll call it the Hill of Zion, a place of peace." Well, that's okay, I don't mind the place of peace, but we'd like to keep the agitation alive too and allow this place to continue to stir people's thoughts and imaginations.
So, as you said, when the church took over, they wanted to forget this past.
I would reckon that was the case. I would think it was a deliberate ploy to give the land to the church, and I'd say that the rector's statement about it being a place of peace was also saying, yes, we'll forget that past and we'll get on with a new beginning.
We're going to go inside the church now. It's open 9 to 5, so please come in. Inside you'll find the flags and the banners of the Goldfields regiments hanging from the ceiling.
So we're inside the church now. So what I find really interesting is we have the church that does contain some of the flags of the regiments who were behaving fairly brutally towards the diggers, but you've restored the name to Agitation Hill and you're encouraging good thought, intellectual argument and so forth in the tradition of the diggers.
Yeah, we certainly are encouraging that, and I guess some of us sit uncomfortably with that institutional history and that link with the military, but then others are very strong that we need to maintain the historical links that are here in the church. Yeah, and that's okay. I don't think it matters too much. In fact, it's fairly healthy that we live with a tension. It might even keep us honest. It might.
But you are telling the full story.
Oh, in as far as we can, yeah.
I meant by that was, by having the symbols and the activities of all of the people who were connected with Agitation Hill, you know, the fors and the againsts.
Yes, and if you want to go back further than that, and I want to, you might have also noticed as you came in, there was a plaque on the gate commemorating that the Jajarung people are the original custodians of the land. So we try to tell that story too, remind ourselves of the story that went on before the white people came here.
In the dream time, all the hills and mountains formed one big mountain, coloured with forest, and was dominated by one huge eagle known as Bunjil, the creator, the giver of life, and a smaller but impressive crow named Wah was white and beautiful. Bunjil banished Wah from the mountain for being greedy. Wah flew away to a distant land and learned the secret of fire, and was scorched in the process, hence being black as the night. Upon his return, armed with his secret weapon, he set fire to Bunjil's mountain, with dramatic results. There was a huge disruption and upheaval, exploding Bunjil's mountain into many fragments, from which the present day hills and valleys, rivers and plains were formed. And the fires, Bunjil, the giver of life, had access to water and put the fires out. And today, Bunjil is lord of the forests and mountains, and Wah is the lord of the hills and plains.
So, what are you looking to achieve here?
One is that we've got this incredible block of land sitting in the middle of town, which is a very nice sort of fantasy-come-wild garden, but it could also be a much better resource for the community, and so we've got a 10-year plan to try and develop it in that way. But also, I think, to recapture some sense of the church being the marketplace, not so much buying and selling goods, but the marketplace of ideas, and not specifically concerned with dogma and doctrine, but concerned with discussion and the airing of issues and finding the truth through conversation.
To which Christian tradition are you taking from or going back to?
Well, I guess I'm particularly thinking of the village church in the Middle Ages, where it was the only public property and where virtually everything happened. It was where meetings were held, it was where people met for worship, it was where people met for any culture that there might be. It was a meeting place and not the sanctuary of a holy huddle. And I'm not much interested today in the church simply being a refuge for the holy huddle. I'm more interested in being a place of conversation and debate, even of argument, if we're moving towards a greater understanding of what life's like and what it's for.
And were you back here in 1853? I'm thinking now of the first ever sermon in what's now Castlemaine, when the preacher based it around the saying that you might like to inherit the world, but why do so if you're going to lose your soul? I don't know if he was talking to the diggers or the police. What would you be preaching back then?
I I guess I'd be preaching much the same as I try and preach today, that we become so focused on material things, and that's enormously destructive to us. And there's still the struggle for us to hold on to our soul, which you might interpret as integrity or truth or your inner core. So I'd be happy to go along with that same theme. Thank you, Jan.
Thank you, Ken.
The story of Bunjil and Wah was from Jarrah's senior man, Rick Nelson. The events of Agitation Hill in 1853 were preceded by the Monster Meeting at Chewton in 1851 and followed by the Red Ribbon Agitation in Bendigo. These three events all led to the Eureka Stockade at Ballarat, where in 1854, 35 diggers and 6 police lost their lives. We tell those stories on the Diggings Tour and the Bendigo Town Tour. But now, it's time to go back into Boston Street for the home run of this Castlemaine Tour. Directions are on track 9.